Welcome to Skin of Color Savvy, the art and science of treating patients of color, the official podcast of the Skin of Color Society, produced by HCP Live. Hosted by Skin of Color Society leaders, Skin of Color Savvy delves into the latest research, clinical insights, and culturally competent care practices in dermatology with leading experts. Whether it's groundbreaking research, practice-changing insights, or highlights from our vibrant community, we're here to provide dermatologists and other healthcare providers with expert perspectives on treating patients with skin of color. Let's dive in and explore how we can continue to advance care, celebrate diversity, and make a meaningful impact for our patients together. I'm Dr. Andrew Alexis, clinical professor at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York, and it's my pleasure today to be joined by my good friend and colleague, Dr. Sean Quatra. I'll give Sean a chance to introduce himself, but before that, we're thrilled to bring you this episode on itch in skin of color. Sean, would you like to introduce yourself?
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for that introduction. For everybody, I'm Dr. Sean Quatra. I'm the professor and chair of dermatology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, Department of Dermatology, and also secretary treasurer of the Skin of Color Society. But more importantly, one of your friends and partners in crime. And I think both of us, Andrew, treat a lot of eczema, a lot of itch patients, a lot of skin of color patients. And we've, you know, given talks together, talked about this, how this is, you know, a big concern. So I'd say what a delight that we're able to have this conversation in front of folks who are listening that are treating patients every day. So we can actually directly impact patient care through this conversation. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. And I love how we are starting off on this topic of itch, because I think until recently, it's really been an under-recognized area. And Sean, you've been on the forefront of understanding potential racial and ethnic differences with respect to itch and dermatoses that are characterized by itch. And so I'd love to start off by giving you the floor to just give us a high-level view of, are there differences in itch across different patient populations of different racial ethnic backgrounds, especially those who have skin of color?
Absolutely. So it's a great question. When I was doing my residency training and practicing as a junior faculty member in Baltimore, Maryland, I was struck with this disconnect. All the images I was seeing in many of our textbooks and many of the guidelines and diagnostic criteria were focused almost totally on Caucasian populations. And coming through our doors and our clinics, I was seeing a ton of diversity and very incredibly variable presentations of these patients. And that highlighted that there seemed to be some differences that weren't actually noted in the literature just a few years ago. So we've tried to meld what we're seeing at the bedside and using all sorts of tools to help us make some insights. So using large data sets, using bench-to-bedside research, taking blood samples and skin samples. And actually, it's pretty remarkable because what we're seeing now, even from a molecular standpoint, helps to explain some of these high-level observations. So right at the top, you know, our group did a study recently published in the British Journal of Dermatology a couple of years ago and found that actually there are some differences in itch broadly. So African-American patients, Asian patients, oftentimes are disproportionately affected with chronic itch. When you look at certain diseases, there are certain diseases that are heavily affecting skin of color patients. So atopic dermatitis, much more common in skin of color patients, particularly African-American patients, as well as prurigo nodularis, where you get those hyperkeratotic nodules on the skin. There are other conditions like lichen planus, CTCL, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma that have unique presentations. But at the top, there's differences broadly with how often are these diseases occurring. And what I think is really fascinating is itch is actually a mirror into society because you have the epidermis and then you have these nerves, these thinly myelinated A-delta fibers and unmyelinated C fibers. And Andrew, they come all the way, almost all the way up to the epidermis, the dermis. And so it really reflects many different things. Your environment, for one. So say there's socioeconomic differences and you're in areas that are heavily polluted. Well, that particulate matter, pollution, is actually more likely to trigger this nerve that then auto-regulates and creates an inflammatory cycle, itch scratch cycle, that leads to this eczema. The quality of your diet. There have been studies about the microbiome as well. So I really think itch is a lens broadly into society. Maybe I'm getting too philosophical about it, Andrew, but that's my standpoint. I really think itch is the key to humanity. Is that too far?
Let's go with it. Yeah.
Let's go with it.
If anyone knows, it's you. So.
No, it's special. And, you know, I wanted to pick your brain too, Andrew, because you've been doing this for a lot longer than me, and you're someone I honestly as a mentor and friend. And I know we publish separately together. You talk about this a lot. And I learned from you initially also about the differences in presentation of several of these itch disorders. Like, for example, atopic dermatitis. Would you mind going through what you're seeing in many of our skin of color patients? And because I honestly love hearing it straight from you, because you were actually the initial pioneer in this space.
No, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you, Sean. I certainly wouldn't call myself the initial pioneer. There's many before me and many with me who have worked in this area. But when it comes to, I think it's a great idea to talk about a specific disorder where itch is front and center. And why don't we start with atopic dermatitis? Because we all recognize what a burden itch has on our patients who suffer with atopic dermatitis. So when it comes to differences in atopic dermatitis in patients with skin of color, the first thing we recognize is variations in how erythema presents itself. So whereas erythema in the purest sense, you know, from the word erythema that comes from the Greek word for red, in lighter skin types, we see shades of red and pink, but in the context of the spectrum of richly pigmented skin types, this redness might not be just pure redness. We might see variations in color, violaceous to gray, reddish brown, and other hues. And so I think that as a first step, sort of broadening what you think erythema looks like, or broadening the definition of erythema to go beyond just red and shades of red and pink and include these other hues, I think is a helpful way not to underappreciate this marker of inflammation in the skin. Sean, what are your thoughts on that concept of sort of, should we broaden the definition of erythema to include these other colors, or should we just use other descriptive terms like violaceous, et cetera?
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you said it, because I was actually sitting in the audience, you may not know this, many years ago, listening to your talk, and you had this image of a patient that really stirred something in me, because you showed an image of the patient when they had atopic derm, and when I looked at the picture, you know, it was maybe slight areas of hyperpigmentation. And then you showed a picture after treatment, and we saw this remarkable transformation in pigmentation. And it's something you wouldn't necessarily appreciate at baseline. This patient was nearly erythrodermic. So I think you highlighted it so elegantly with only a photo. You know, only a photo can do that. But you highlighted it's not just erythema. It's brown colored pigment. It's purple colored pigment. It's many of these other shades. And it's actually a disparity at the bedside, because as dermatologists, we're visual creatures. To believe it or not, I was actually taught wrongly that you don't listen to the patient. You look at their skin. And this is one example of where that gets you in huge trouble, because if you look at someone's skin, you can't totally appreciate it. And actually, many of our trial tools, like the Eczema Area and Severity Index, have erythema in there. So the disease is being undercalled in general. We did a study showing that less African-American patients are getting on biologics and small molecule inhibitors because their disease is being undercalled. And it's a huge issue that we're not realizing that erythema. We're not looking at these different hues, the brownish color, the purple color, all of these different hues that are so important. And taking that one step further, something that's directly translatable in everybody who's listening's clinic, the next time they have clinic later this week, is you can protect yourself against bias by asking patients a question. You should have greater reliance on symptoms and ask everybody, what is the worst itch you've had in the last 24 hours? It's a simple question. Zero is nothing. 10 is the worst imaginable. at any moment in a 24-hour period. And I can tell you that one thing takes less than 15 seconds, has totally transformed my management of patients. Patients, I thought, oh, it's not bad. We can give you a topical steroid. Then I saw their itches over a 7. And anytime your itch is, you know, a 5 or higher, especially a 7 or higher, that means they're not sleeping. That means they have low quality of life. That means they have all of these other metrics that are terrible, more anxiety, depression. Anytime I get a 7, it triggers me to go into talking about discussing systemic therapies as well. So I can't tell you how many patients that has changed their management. And also, it's helped me correct also some type of a visual bias where we may not be appreciating the erythema properly. So we have to know that, especially in skin of color patients, we have to be hypervigilant about asking about objective symptoms, itch, sleep, all these factors, and it makes dramatic differences. Patients who are for years on topical steroids, after I ask that question, immediately go to systemic. So it can have just such a transformative effect from that simple knowledge of realizing you're not going to have the same degree of erythema.
That is such an important and helpful pearl, one that we can all implement in our practices immediately, asking about itch and rating it on a scale. Now, moving beyond atopic dermatitis specifically, when you think about itch as a symptom of so many disorders or sometimes just presenting by itself, chronic itch, do you have any insights into the workup and the approach to therapy that you would like to share with the audience?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we did a study a year or two ago that was published in the Journal of Investigative Dermatology. And what we did was we wanted to see, is there a genetic basis also for people that develop itch generally with no rash or people that develop small bumps, prurigo-like lesions? And we found that actually African-American and Asian patients are genetically predisposed to develop skin lesions also. So an element of this fibrotic axis, right? We see in our clinics, it's not just some of these conditions we typically see, like atopic dermatitis being more popular. It's keloids, it's central centrifugal cicatricial alopecia, it's scleroderma. There's an axis of fibrosis. So that study helped shift the lens about workup and all these things. Now we know that chronic itch or pruritus in general and prurigo nodularis, which you can have nodules, papules, skin lesions, are on a continuum. So for any patient that comes in generally with chronic itch or with these skin lesions, we do a targeted workup. We get a complete blood count with differential. Why are we getting it? Well, it's not oftentimes, but we know that sometimes dyscrasias and hematologic dyscrasias can be associated with chronic itch. So say your hemoglobin's super high, polycythemia vera, say some of your blood counts are super low. Like we just want to check that out. I also always get differential because, as I said before, the blood eosinophil count is a helpful biomarker. If that is high, then it's a biomarker of type 2 inflammation. So those are patients that would respond to intramuscular steroid therapy. They would respond to methotrexate. They would respond to narrowband UVB phototherapy. They would respond off-label to drugs like dupilumab or lebrikizumab or tralokinumab, nemolizumab. Agents like that it would respond to off-label. So that is a helpful metric, CBC with differential. And then you want to make sure you're looking at the liver and the kidneys. So you can either get liver function tests and kidney function tests, or I just get a CMP or comprehensive metabolic panel. And then you can just make sure there's no dyscrasias there. Also, it has a fasting glucose. So you have a CBC, a differential, a CMP. I think it's easy to order a thyroid, a TSH, because it's a quick fix. It's not necessarily something that a great association with itch, but it has been noted. So a CBC with differential, CMP, a TSH. And then you're at a good spot where you need those labs initially, but there are other labs that you can go down depending on the right context. So if somebody has a history of IV drug use, then maybe you'll go into the hepatitis panel, the HIV, and they have other risk factors. Say somebody just had a trip to a really exotic location, right? Some patient that was going to Hawaii and swimming in tropical environment, and we were able to get a stool O&P and actually found a parasite. But that was the only time I've ever found a parasite. And I've checked it many times, and I stopped checking immediately after because I realized it's just a waste of time. So you have to be careful. And then other things we've done research with chronic itch and malignancies, if it's less than 3 months or 6 months, less than a year, that is a slightly increased risk of malignancy. It's still rare, You want to make sure people are up to date on their age-appropriate screening. If it's very sudden onset, it's not wrong to get a chest X-ray, PA, and lateral to rule out a Hodgkin or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, to get a serum and urine electrophoresis to make sure there's no gammopathies, and making sure folks are up to date on screening and check and review systems. So that's a good place to start. I'm always looking at the blood eosinophils and the IgE, but to tell you what, there's a lot of these chronic itch patients that have chronic itching, and they're centered around this neuroimmune axis. It might be more of the immune system. It might be more of the neural system. So one thing I do is I test patients if it's not clearly neuropathic, just on the scalp, on the arms. I'll test them with immune-based therapy. So I like to do either intramuscular triamcinolone, 60, 80 milligrams injection, see if they improve. I like doing things like topical steroids, methotrexate, off-label dupilumab, seeing if there's a response. And then that'll help guide you. Is it more of an immune-mediated itch, or is it more of a generalized neuropathic itch where you may need to go down this really uncharted path like gabapentin and other neuroacting agents?
Wow. Well, you just dropped so much pearls, so much knowledge there.
Oh, but I confuse everybody.
So I think in a nutshell, when we have a patient with chronic itch where we don't have a clear explanation from a primary disorder that's associated with itch, like atopic dermatitis or prurigo nodularis, we can pursue this workup that we've heard from Dr. Quadra. Do you agree with that, Sean, at that summary? That's the type of patient is the chronic itch patient where it's of unclear origin. Is that
absolutely
right?
Okay. Absolutely.
So just wanted to clarify that. Thank you so much. Time flies when you're having fun. I could talk to you for hours, Sean, but this is the end of our time here at our inaugural episode of Skin of Color Savvy. We hope that you found today's discussion informative and inspiring. And if you're interested in learning more about the Skin of Color Society and its impactful work, visit skinofcolorsociety.org. Please don't forget to subscribe to HCP Live's newsletters and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest in dermatology and more. We'll be back soon with another episode, so be sure to subscribe to Skin of Color Savvy on your favorite podcast platform. Until next time, take care, and thank you for listening.